Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Cybeers. Today, I am joined by Jack Rutherford, Chief Technology Officer. Welcome, Jack.
Good afternoon.
You're back on the heaps normals, mate. You've used up your drinking tokens for April that I hear. Tell me about this system that you're on.
I'm on a quota. I've given myself a monthly quota for the year. So that would be 2 days of drinking a month. And unfortunately, I've used up my April days.
I might have made you drink some red wine last night.
My arm's been twisted. So 50% your fault this month.
It's always my fault. That's what you're telling me anyway. look, I'm a bit jealous that you've actually got the capability and the willpower to do this. So I know I'm taking the mick out of you, but it's probably because I'm a little bit jealous at the same time.
Well, so thank you. I appreciate that.
I think I might need to take some of the inspirational lead.
We'll talk about frameworks and methodologies for how to implement this after the show.
Yes, thanks. Really, really appreciate that. It's just stop drinking, I think. Also joined by Richard Granger, Global Head of Digital Forensics. Welcome, Rich, as always.
Thank you for having me yet again.
Yeah, I know you're definitely not on a drinking quota.
No, absolutely not.
I think as soon as a ransomware starts, it's all right, better go and get the gin.
Yep, absolutely.
And then Brad Morgan, Head of Managed Security Services. It's been a little while since you've been on a Cybeers, Brad.
It has, yes. Thank you for having me back.
And you're the same as me. You've brought these ones in today. The Stomping Ground Passion Fruit Smash. Now, I'm not normally a fan of the sour beer. I know you are. Why'd you pick these ones?
It screamed at me in the bottle shop, and I thought, actually, that's beautiful. I had passion fruit yogurt this morning, so I will go passion fruit beer this afternoon.
Yeah, look, my arm was also twisted. I was very much looking forward to getting down the gym, and on the way here, I said, I'm not going to have a beer. Yeah, but it's Cybeers. How can we do it without a beer?
Yep.
Rich, I know we've gotten you back on the beers, but you've reverted back to the gin. What's going on?
I thought, mix it up a bit, keep people guessing. What are we drinking this time?
So be a threat actor.
Yeah. Don't be consistent. So what I've got today is Reed plus Reed or Reed and Reed. This is a New Zealand barrel-aged gin. So we were introduced to this by Cameron from the DIFA team in Auckland when he came over Christmas last year, and we finished a bottle of it and then another one magically appeared. So this is that one.
Did you magically make it appear?
No. I did not.
Well, on Cam.
Yeah, so it's really great. Enjoying it with some SodaSmith tonic water and, yeah, highly recommend.
Yeah, love the SodaSmith. So, all right, gentlemen, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Look, I do love Stomping Ground, just down local Collingwood from here, not too far down the road. So let's see how this goes.
Sargins.
Good. Sargins.
On the Sargins.
That's nice.
Tasty. For a sour.
For a sour, it's quite good. It's just got the right amount of sour to it.
Yeah, that's great. Now, we're not here just to talk about beers. I wish we were, even though we could. We're here to talk about operational technology security. It's a topic that's pretty close to my heart. I've got a passion for cyber, but then even more of a passion for OT cyber. Growing up in Perth, it's a pretty important topic. And it's becoming more and more important, Jack, with SOCI coming into effect, and we're starting to see more industries being caught up in SOCI and having to ensure they've got security in OT.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it's a big problem. For those that don't know, OT is a bit different from your usual IT networks. OT, operational technology, is those systems that aren't traditional hosts and servers, but rather run manufacturing physical equipment out there, control plants and systems, and typically
mine sites,
heaps of those here in Australia. Typically much simpler than a traditional computing system, but also with much less security. Hence why this is such a problem. In fact, such a problem that, you know, these regulations and legislations are coming through because the impact of these systems being compromised is arguably much higher than your traditional IT networks. If you have systems that are physically controlling equipment, you know, regulating the quality of the water that we eat, the plumbing systems, the sewerage, etc., etc.
I know you caught yourself there.
You got me. I don't eat water. I only drink hop water. So yes, as I was saying, operational technology, extremely important. The security components of that, even more important, arguably more important than traditional networks. Hence, the shift that we're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. But Rich, okay, Stuxnet. We saw Stuxnet countless years ago where there was a compromise of a nuclear facility that a threat actor managed to get access to that impacted uranium refinement and set back a nuclear program a number of years.
Yeah.
That's considered an OT network, and that was, I'm trying to think, even 8+ years ago, maybe even more. Why are we only thinking about this now if we've seen things like Stuxnet and compromises of other OT networks?
I think it's becoming a lot more prolific, and we're seeing incidents that involve OT a lot more. I think Colonial Pipeline's a really good example. We saw in the US where
that one, the like, $20 million payment that they made in the US.
Yeah, but so I obviously live in Australia, so it wasn't really affected by it in terms of, you know, getting fuel. But when you talk to people from the US, they're like, yeah, like I couldn't get fuel. I know people that were lining up at petrol stations or gas stations, as they call them, gas stations, and people are getting all the fuel out. They're filling up their jerry cans and, like, you just can't get fuel. So it's a huge impact on people. And what Jack was saying before as well is for OT systems, it's all about making sure there's uptime and things are operating correctly, whereas when it's more IT, we're more interested in, you know, confidentiality and making sure the systems are secure. But uptime's king for OT because it can have such a huge impact on a huge spectrum of people, large portions of populations, if we're talking about water systems and things like that, which you don't really have with IT. When we deal with ransomware, it's like data gets stolen and published, and obviously it's not great, but the impact on the population can be a lot less than for OT.
And this is why we talk about hospitals. We look at the golden triad of cybersecurity, confidentiality, integrity, availability.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main industries where you talk to the security professionals and you say, availability is the top requirement for you.
Yeah.
Confidentiality, yeah, it's important, but it's personal data at the end of the day. But then integrity, availability, integrity, because if the data's not available to understand what medication to give a patient, then there could be lives at risk. Or if you could alter that data to say give them a higher dose, again, you've got lives at risk. So we're starting to think about how cyber actually impacts people's lives in the OT space. So this is why they've added during COVID, supermarkets were added to Socky, which everyone's surprised by. But then COVID taught us if you can't get toilet paper, you can't survive. So Brad, from a defensive perspective, thinking of what we need to monitor and what we need to protect. So you don't have to talk to Richard Granger. He's a lovely guy, but he's not someone you want to see pop up on Teams. What are we doing? What are we seeing that shift to monitor those more traditional OT networks?
Yeah, look, there's stark differences between an OT and an IT network. So on an OT network, you've got a lot of infrastructure that's communicating over the network, just like an IT network, but a lot of that is unencrypted. And there's not really an easy way to monitor what's happening on those devices. So you are relying on that unencrypted environment and being able to interpret what you're seeing there, which means if we can see it as defenders, if a threat actor's in that environment, they can see it, they can study it, and they can learn it. So it is quite concerning when you look at it through that lens.
And I know there's newer technologies that are being released around monitoring for changes on OT devices. Is that enough, or are we then assuming that it's okay for a threat actor to be in the network? We're not wanting to monitor for that lateral movement, that traffic. We're just saying, you can get in and then we'll deal with it later.
Yeah, look, I mean, ideally, it's exactly the same as an IT network. You don't want a threat actor in there. If these items don't have to be exposed to the internet, they shouldn't be. If you can segregate the environment, then that is the best path forward. There are still, and this is something people forget, there are still IT requirements within an OT network. You still have servers, you still have switches and all of that sort of thing. If you've got IP cameras out there, you still need a server for them to call back to. So you have to understand what IT infrastructure is there. You need to keep that patched and up to date and monitored. But you also have to be aware of state changes in any of your OT, and you have to be able to identify anomalies and those those sorts of things and have an action plan if you do identify these things.
Look, and then it's the converged nature of a lot of organizations we talk to. They say, oh, there's absolutely no connectivity from the IT network to the OT network until you go and talk to the systems administrator who's just patched their own IDP through the firewall because they'll never be compromised and because they need to be able to then jump box access from their machine to the OT network instead of walking the 20 meters across and have to sit at the OT monitoring device. Yeah. Rich, what kind of risk does this bring into to an OT environment when you then go and converge IT into OT?
It's a huge risk. And the amount of times that we have an incident response engagement and they're like, no, this is completely separate. This is, there's no way that they can get into that environment. And then it turns out, yeah, they did get into that environment. And you're right, it's because people don't want to, and you got to also appreciate it from the business perspective. Like when we're talking about OT environments, production, manufacturing, all this stuff where information about that's really important to the business. So they want up to date, and you can see why they're bridging these gaps between IT and OT. But it's something that needs to be monitored heavily and continually looked at and make sure that it you know, it's at the front of people's mind, it's being monitored, and it's not just RDP from one machine to another and there's nothing in between and no one's looking at it, and because it happens all the time.
Yeah, you need to, this comes back to what I was just saying with Brad, it's not just is someone changing something in there, because that's already too late.
Yeah,
they've already mapped it, they already understand what's in there.
Yeah,
you should be monitoring, is someone at least getting or attempting access into my OT network?
Yeah.
Jack, coming from an offensive mindset, then on the other hand, a lot of organizations need 24/7 uptime of their OT network. They might be, I'm thinking in particular, mine sites, prisons, gaming facilities, because they run big OT networks. So how do you pen test or go about controls testing that we're starting to talk about of an OT network? It's vastly different to an IT network.
It's quite hard. It certainly does have its own challenges. I mean, an easy way that you could think about solving it, right? People sometimes just think, well, why don't you just have a development version of this network? It's totally cost prohibitive, unfortunately. You can't just stand up exactly the same network in nature. Often these small devices cost a lot of money because they're very specified for what they do. Networks are expensive. You can't just replicate it. Which means ultimately you're probably testing on a production network, and as we've already noted, uptime is king. So you don't want to have a risk that the pen testing is going to impact the uptime of these networks or take systems down or, you know, prevent that availability. So you've just got to be really careful. I guess one of the key things to address here is making sure that the people conducting these tests have the right knowledge. So we talk about training and experience. But there's not actually a whole lot of training out there aimed towards this. We've gone through this recently ourselves. Yeah, there's a few things, but a lot of it is based on OT fundamentals, you know, which is important, but it's not telling you the pen test specific considerations. So I think there's a real gap in the market there that needs to be filled.
The one we did find was SANS, and it looks like a fantastic course. I think we sent it to each other within 30 seconds, and then it says on hold because they're trying to search for an instructor. So we're saying this is such an important topic, but then we're saying there's no one out there who's specifically trained in it, and now lives are at risk.
Yeah,
how do we tackle that?
We talk about that cybersecurity itself has a skill shortage problem.
Oh, I disagree with that vehemently. So you really want to get
maybe we shouldn't open that can of worms. But I think we can both agree.
I'll preface that with, I believe there's a there's no skill shortage, there's an expectations mismanagement, which I've talked about extensively, so I'm not going to go into it. But then it maybe starts to become a bit more real when you get down to these really niche things like OT cyber. So if we go and throw just a blanket statement, there's a skill shortage, disagree, but there's more of an expectations mismanagement of who's going to work on it, but perhaps maybe in these really niche areas there is a skill shortage.
Well, if SANS, one of the biggest training organizations in the world, can't even find an instructor in this space, right, if they're struggling.
Then, yes, there's a skill shortage in that area.
Yeah, so you really need people with that specialized knowledge because, you know, if you make a mistake, the consequences are much higher. So it's really hard. You can't just train them up on the job because then you risk the OT network going down, the system's breaking.
Look, and you said it's cost prohibitive to take a full replica of the network. Can we perhaps just look and say, okay, well, in that network, you've got this particular camera. I heard recently there's an OT network that has sensors over the bins that will inform the organization when the bin is full and the cleaner needs to come and clean it, needs to empty it.
Yeah.
Super cool. But could you then not just take one camera, one bin, one server, one Modbus, one PLC controller, and say, test these to see if there's any firmware issues in them? Could you take that approach?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really good idea. We just take a smaller version of the larger things that you have in production, test them in a much smaller contextualized environment outside of production. Firmware is a big thing, right? You can target those specific individual devices. Targeting them one by one is going to take a lot of time, but it's probably also needed because this is where the issues are, right? Firmware issues in a single device that no one's ever heard of before that turns out 10,000 organizations use this and didn't even realize. So I think that's a really good approach.
Look, I seem to remember there's a couple of tests that we've done. When we did a camera, we actually found traffic going to some rather malicious countries that you don't really want traffic going to. So when we're talking about vulnerabilities in the OT network, it's also then checking the whole supply chain and saying, where is this particular thing being manufactured and is there possibly a backdoor on there that a threat actor could be using to get into that OT network?
Yeah, it's certainly happened before. And I mean, so many of these things are manufactured in, let's just say, various countries for now. We'll leave it at various countries.
May have 106% tariff on it at the moment.
Yep. Various countries. because you don't have many eyes on these things, many professionals pulling them apart, testing them on a day-to-day basis, you don't uncover these potential malicious embedded issues that could be on the devices. And because there's so many different types of devices, right, it's so hard to just test one and then say you're all good in that category, right? There's so many different cameras and controllers. Oh, it's a really big issue.
The other one I seem to remember is when you were a penetration tester. So we're going back a little bit here. Yourself and one of our other principals with a device that you pulled apart that you then got a camera to zoom all the way down into one of the very particular chips to find the details about it. And you actually found a vulnerability on that chip that could have impacted the whole device. So it is possible, but again, it takes the professionals and the time to do it.
Yeah, and that's going down the path of the vulnerabilities that are likely to be exploited by your run-of-the-mill threat actor for devices that are exposed to the internet versus the really more specialized zero-day type stuff that you can find as well. I'm sure there is an entire underworld of zero-day type specialist stuff on these devices because, like you say, you can pull them apart physically, jack in physically, typically no security controls preventing you from doing this. Look up the firmware, the specs, right? A lot of it's online. And you know, if you're a security researcher, go for your life. But it's these devices that are exposed to the internet that have vulnerabilities in your typical things, like the exposed web dashboard that allows you to log in as an administrator, right? Again, it's your simple stuff that really hits the hardest, yeah, I think.
Default credentials in OT networks are absolutely rife. Rich, I remember walking through one that we did and we were promised that there was no OT until we found about 7 cupboards that had a lot of OT in them.
Finding lots of legacy systems.
Yeah, and seem to remember guessing a number of the passwords.
And it goes back to what you were saying before about uptime, right? Like the reason why these systems are still there is because no one wants to take the time, or they might not be able to take the time to decommission them, get something new and secure. I was working on an incident recently where the iDRAC for the virtual machine was so old that I had to use the client server 2003 install to be able to access it. So
just to log in.
And again, the reason why they still had it in production is because it's running critical infrastructure from their perspective, and they just can't, get the time to upgrade it.
So do we then think about compensating controls then that we need to put on Absolutely. These networks?
Absolutely.
If we can't patch it, we can't turn it off. The thing that always comes to my mind is we're doing a test at a hospital. And nurse on call systems, MRI machines, and CT scanners. when they ship, they're shipped with a particular version of OpenSSH that at the time was secure. They've gone through 2 years of testing to get into this new build, and at the time, that version of OpenSSH was secure. But then you go and do a pen test or an offensive security test, and a couple of years later, it's out of date. But those nurse on call buttons are so vital, and the MRI and the CT need to be up 24 hours. Again, uptime is key.
Yeah.
So what kind of compensating controls can we put into a hospital to protect against MRI machines being compromised?
Yeah, I mean, the immediate thing that comes to mind is segregation through the network. So MRI machine, you know, that might need to talk to, having gone to MRIs fairly recently as well and enjoyed that, is, you know, they got the console machines and things like that. It's like keeping it separate. There's no reason why the reception PC should be able to RDP to the MRI technician console.
Yep.
Like you're drastically reducing the risk when you look at all these different things in the network, what needs to talk to what. Let's put them in their own little VLANs, their own little separate buckets, and very specific rules are in place to allow the communication. Maybe that MRI is domain joined and it needs to authenticate for the console technician to log on.
I wonder if an MRI machine can be domain joined.
Don't know.
I feel like I need to go and find out.
Let's say
if there is a hospital would like to work with us, so we can find out if your MRI machine's domain joined.
Yeah.
Reach out.
Yeah. But like only locking it down to it can authenticate with the username and password. Like that's it. So we see it all the time where flat networks are in place. Their actors get in through some kind of vulnerability or some misconfiguration and they're able to hop between all the critical systems, all the sensitive information repositories and do what they need to do to try and make money.
Yeah.
And that could be avoided by, you know, putting these things in VLANs, segregating them, keeping them separate.
Well, we look at Change Healthcare and they were offline for weeks. We've even had hospitals in Victoria that have been targeted and they haven't been able to get blood test results. They haven't been able to get a lot of the information fed from one area to the other. So it's not necessarily having to just make sure it's that one part of the network. It's what's most critical. What's the things that you need the most? Brad, I'm going to circle back to the conversation with Jack around testing and firmware checks and so many different versions. Piece of technology we came across at Perth CyberCon, Phosphorus.
Yes.
They claim to have been in stealth for a long time. They're now out into open market. That they've taken, I think, 5,000 OT devices?
Yeah.
And they've worked out there's only, for most of them, such as cameras, I think they said there was only 7 individual pieces of firmware that run on these thousands of cameras, and they can detect changes, and that's how they're doing it. Tell me more about how that works from a MDR monitoring perspective and how that's changing a little bit of the likes of their competitors, not calling anyone out, but Dragos, Clarity, et cetera.
Yeah. So I guess to understand that, we take it back a level. And when a lot of these OT providers are doing vulnerability scanning, they're reliant on understanding exactly what's on the network, understanding what the model and make is, and then the firmware that's on that. And then when there is a vulnerability release, that's how they're flagging it. They're not actually, most of them aren't doing real-time scanning. They're relying on knowing what's in those environments. So where Phosphorus have taken it a step further is by really going a lot deeper and looking into that. But they take it to the next level where they actually can reach out to those assets and test default credentials and start being a little bit more interactive with the assets in the environment to try and give us as defenders more capability to understand what's happening and to see state changes. So if something's locked into an operation state and all of a sudden it switches to a new state, an editable state, for example, we should know that immediately and be on the phone going, have you got a tech on site? Have you got someone who should be switching the state of this piece of infrastructure? If not, we need to look a lot deeper. Ideally, that's where we would be monitoring rather than just looking across the wire. We can see a lot on the wire, but if we can start understanding state changes and anomalies, I think we can be a lot more proactive in bringing security around OT further towards where IT is right now.
Mm. Look, it's an interesting concept. It's taking that, again, we talk a lot about mindset shifts in cyber, how to defend against modern threat actors. And it's then having to take the organization on the journey of saying, you've been doing it this way for a very long time. Yep. You need to consider this way. But unless cyber sits at a level where they can have influence and impact, it's going to we've done it that way for years, then we're going to keep on doing it that way.
We are. And it's something I've been reflecting a lot lately on where I was at 8 years ago. And it's made me think about where SIEM technology was 8 years ago. And if I look at the good old days of Alien Vault, when they were in the right-hand quadrant, they were seen as a leader, right? And if I look at what that was back then compared to what a lot of the OT SIEMs are right now, I feel like they're at that point. They're a long way behind because, as we've said, it's only becoming critical now to really start doing this OT monitoring. There's going to be a lot of maturity in this field, but you still can't install an agent on most OT infrastructure. You're still going to be reliant on what's on the wire. But I think there's a lot of improvement coming soon.
Open question to everyone. Is it only a matter of time before a major OT breach hits something in Australia that's going to have a national impact that's going to have an impact on all of us?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. 100%.
If we look at my thinking goes to Colonial, right? People couldn't get fuel. We don't have big pipelines for our fuel. Dampier to Bunbury pipeline, gas pipeline, runs from Dampier in the north of WA down to Bunbury, and it brings all the gas down. Now, there's gas turbines in the southwest of that state that rely on that gas. So all of a sudden, you can't get gas to cook, heat water, heat your house. You can't run some of the gas turbines when the coal-fired stations are struggling.
Well, they're being shut down as well across Victoria.
They are, yep. So we are now relying on more gas turbines. So I think gas is one of those things where if you can affect a gas pipeline in this country, people will really struggle.
Mm. That's my take. There's no hair standing up on my arms or the back of my neck at all.
The other component to that, I guess, is, you know, we're thinking about a stereotypical OT networks, gas, electricity, mine sites. I'm sure there's plenty of organizations out there now that think that they really only have a traditional IT network who are actually using a whole lot of OT that they don't even realize, you know, things you're using in your everyday life, air conditioning controllers, fire alarms, et cetera, and you know, they don't even know they have them, let alone have they thought about their security policy and how they're going to segregate them and put controls around them.
There was an incident, Rich, that I specifically remember. Mm. And you just pointed at me and I think we were going to talk about the same thing. And on the IT network, this organization put some thermometers to monitor the fridge temperature.
Yeah.
And then also sensors to let people know if the fridge door was left open because they were in the catering space.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things, you're right, Jack, or just jacking into the network. Mm. Organizations think they don't have an OT network, but they have OT devices on the IT network.
Yeah. We had one incident as well where it was sort of a couple of weeks of pain, and then they measured success by the sensors in the bathroom that turn on the lights are working now. So we're good.
Yeah. As soon as the bathroom lights working again, we know we're sweet.
You know, what runs all of that?
Yeah. I remember that one. And then we saw the lights turn on and went, okay, I guess that was that server.
Yeah.
you don't think about these things. And then, as I mentioned previously, supermarkets. We saw it during CrowdStrike Friday. We all remember it. We saw the big supermarket chains that were running CrowdStrike, and then all of a sudden all the tills are taken offline and no one can pay for anything. They can't scan anything. Now, I love using the smart trolleys at my local Coles, by the way. If you haven't tried them, game changer. Saves me at least a couple of minutes. It's very valuable. But now we've got trolleys that are connected to networks that then the trolley goes offline. All of a sudden we can't pay for groceries. We're going cashless society. So you can clearly see why supermarkets are included in critical infrastructure. But then you're going to have your smaller ones, your local independents. I'm from country Western Australia. I know there's a lot of independents. that independent isn't going to be thinking about cybersecurity.
No.
So then they get caught up in Socky, and then prices are just going to go up, and they're going to have to pass on the price of cyber onto the consumer. So what does this do to us? Does it make cyber, do they just run the risk and they say, well, we're not going to do it?
It's a hard problem to solve.
It is.
Yep, you've got to find that balance, I guess.
We are here to solve world problems about cybersecurity.
And to drink beer, of course.
Well, unless you don't have any days left.
Beer or hot water, whatever works.
Or hot water. So, look, time will tell of what's going to happen, but organizations need to actually start considering they do have OT networks. But if you're running a big OT network, you're more than likely going to be a target for a threat actor. On the back of that, Brad, wise words of wisdom around OT security. What have you got for us?
I think building on what you just said, if you've got a big OT network, you're going to be a target. A lot of organizations don't know if they've got big OT networks. You know, you think of building management systems, and I know we've touched on it. Most people aren't considering that. So, you know, if you come to work on a Monday morning and all of a sudden your swipe card's not working.
Or the lifts aren't working.
You know, you need to extract yourself to that level and think about what is running in your building, in your physical environment. That's OT is where cyber or digital meets the real world. And you need to think about those touch points.
Philosophical. Rich.
I think it's something I touched on before, which is like the network segregation. And that's not just for OT, that's for IT as well. There's so many times where the threat actor's progression throughout their attack could have been stopped if there were adequate controls in place around segregation of a network. And I think where OT comes into place, that's particularly important, as we've highlighted, the impact of someone getting into an OT network and messing around and changing things and taking systems offline can be devastating. So if you are operating OT infrastructure, having that segregation, and there will probably be some legacy rules in place to allow communication between different things and monitoring that, I think that's critical.
Finally, Jack, here, follow that up.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm going to flip what you said before on its head, right? We're talking about how
controversial
the rise of more legislation and regulation, it could be a challenge for small to medium enterprises for sure. But I guess the positive side of this is it drives the larger enterprises to have to think about it. And I think the real benefit of that is there's a huge gap in the market in a lot of these spaces. I feel like we've commented on many of those gaps today. Technology that can be improved, skills that are missing throughout the market. And so that those gaps can be filled. There's opportunity to fill those gaps. And I think, you know, that can really drive this space forward. People will see the opportunity, move into them eventually. It'll just take a bit of time.
Conversely, is it happening fast enough? And as I said, is it just going to take a big incident for organisations to finally realise this is important?
Yeah, usually does.
I look at the big three incidents that we had, Optus, Medibank, Latitude. And I've been in cyber for 21 years. Now we're finally getting people talking about war games, talking about playbooks, talking about controls testing, EDR, MDR, MFA, because it took those three breaches to happen for the boards to start asking questions. So I think it's going to take that big incident to happen locally. We saw Colonial, we've seen change, and they've been massive impacts, but it hasn't impacted us here locally. Until something happens here locally, I don't know if organizations are going to take it seriously.
Agreed.
And on that note, gentlemen, thank you for joining me on Cybiz.
Cheers.
Thank you very much. Cheers.